Very happy to be back in Los Angeles and discuss the realities with all of you, the material realities and the spiritual realities. It's becoming a real good time now to discuss reality, isn't it? A lot of inspiration out there for facing what needs to be faced. And there are diminishing places where to hide from reality. So it's a good time for those of you who actually want to be progressive in your life. But the question is, how many of you actually want to be progressive? And what is progress anyway? Let's take a look at a verse from the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Knowledge of the Absolute, text 28. There Lord Krishna says, Yesham ta antakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajante mam dridhavrata. Translation. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated are freed from the dualities of delusion and they engage themselves in my service with determination. Now before we look at a bit of Srila Prabhupada's purport, let us consider our own situation. Yesham ta antakatam papam jananam punyakarmana. How many have acted piously in previous lives and in this life? Well, generally people today don't know what is piety. Maybe it's helping old ladies to cross the street or giving a donation to the cancer fund or something. How to live a life of progress in purifying the mind and senses. That's unknown today. So people really don't know what does it mean to be pious. They don't understand how actions are the basis of piety, not just a kind of religious demeanor in which you bow your head and say, I believe in God. No. The piety that Krishna is talking about in Bhagavad Gita is all about action. You're not an intense sense gratifier. And you understand there's some kind of ultimate control in the universe, and you're held accountable to that control, that ultimate control. And it's not that simply you're concerned with your behavior toward human beings. You're concerned with your interactions with all species of life. That is piety. Still, as I say, piety is a word that most people don't even use these days. How many of you, in terms of your friends and relatives, will say, oh, he's really pious, or she's really pious? Yeah, it's a forgotten word. The other forgotten word I found in speaking to high school classes is chastity. I've made this experiment, you know, in many English-speaking countries, USA, UK, Australia, New Zealand. You know, I ask, you know, classes of high school, you know, especially the girls, say, do you know what chaste means? And I kind of, chaste, it sounds like a word we heard, you know, ages ago, but now I don't know what it means. Without being pious, without being chaste, where is human civilization? These days, everyone is taught to just put everything literally out on the street. Open doors. And you have a right. In fact, it's necessary that you must go for your share of the world's action and more. Because if you don't, you're going to be left out. And it's a horrible feeling to come in last in the race. I was speaking about this at New Vrindavan, the Festival of Inspiration, on Friday morning. I left early in order to get your association here. They were angry with me there for leaving early, but I hope you'll be happy here. I asked the devotees there at the festival, how many of you have played the game of musical chairs as kids? No one? Yes. Even in Germany, they play musical chairs. Yes. She's from Germany. So, wasn't it a horrible feeling to when the music stopped and you didn't have a chair to sit down in? Remember that? You wanted to avoid that reality so intensely that you would even cram into onto a chair with another person and, you know, and remember that? So much pressure was on you. Don't be left without a chair when the music stops. Well, now that we are all adults, for the most part here, that same musical chairs mentality prevails. Look, this is just the way life is. You know, we didn't make the world this way, but it's the way it is, and we just got to act like that. This is, I explained, the myth of resignation. Now, don't blame me. I didn't make the world like this. I'm just trying to do the best thing, you know, for myself and my family. You know, my family, of course. Everyone nods their heads. Yeah. Just try and do the best thing for yourself and your loved ones and your family for however long your family stays together. Because the social statistics in the USA now are that more children grow up in single-parent homes than in a regular home. So, but anyway, I'm just doing this for my family. I've got to keep my place in the race. I don't want to be left without a chair when the music stops. That'll be horrible. So, we've just got to be realistic. We didn't make the world like this. But we've just got to do what's necessary. So, in this way, I was explaining to the devotees gathered at the Festival of Inspiration. In this way, our whole life becomes dominated consciously and unconsciously by this insecurity that I don't want to be left out of the race. If I drop out of the race, you know, I'm looked down upon. And what will be my future? Now, however, people are realizing if you stay in the race, what is your future? And what is your reward for staying in the race? All the madness about economic development has produced more financial inequality than ever before. Remember the myth how it was all going to trickle down, right? It was a good religion for a while. It had its purpose, you know. Keep everyone's nose to the grindstone. So, it's becoming obvious that your being a healthy member of the race is not doing yourself any good or the world by being a healthy, functioning member of the materialistic race. In terms of economics, it's not working out. And in terms of the world's environment, it's not working out. So you have to kind of put on the blinders to all the latest social research, put on the blinders to all the ecological realities, and just say, hey, I just got to do what I got to do. I don't want to be left without a chair when the music stops. But even while the music's playing, there's not enough chairs. What are you going to do? Are you going to be able to just tell your children that, you know, this is just the way the life is? I can't offer anything better than that. Now is a great time to analyze your lifestyle and make big changes. That's the advantage of the circumstances today. You can actually use the economic and environmental pressures of the day to motivate yourself to make some big changes. How to live a life where you're going for true progress. Everyone wants to be progressive. No one wants to be, no one wants to lag behind. But what is real progress? Can you call what human beings have done for the past 100 years or so, can you call that progress? Real progress means you move forward without destroying everything around you. So how can you call it progress when there's so much destruction? Internally in terms of psychology, outwardly in terms of the health, and then, of course, the environment. How is all that progress? I was speaking at the University of Toronto, and usually when I go to another country, then I don't speak about that country. I speak about the bad things that are happening somewhere else. So in Canada, I speak about the USA. You see? The Canadians like it when you beat up on the USA. You know? So I refer to that country south of the border, you know. So I was explaining to them the latest statistics released by the U.S. government that 45.7% of university college students in the USA have at least one psychological disorder. 45.7% have at least one psychological disorder. Now, is that progress? And all the emphasis on trying to achieve wealth has produced a society where people are in complete anxiety to the extent they're becoming depressed. Anxiety disorders lead to depression. So where's the progress? And then, when you look at nature, when you look at the environment, what other species other than human beings today has destroyed its own natural habitat? No other creature does that. And yet we've made so much progress. And therefore we have to be careful about becoming Krishna conscious because maybe we won't be progressive enough, right? Because there's so much glorious progress happening out there. But the jury has already returned the verdict. Psychologically, people are walking disasters these days. Maybe not you all, but the statistics are there. Health-wise, people don't know how to eat properly, sleep properly. They don't know how to do anything with their bodies properly. Environmentally, right now, statistics show that the way human beings live, you need 1.3 Earth planets to accommodate the current economic endeavors of human beings. In other words, you've already exceeded the Earth's carrying capacity. And if you go on like this, by the middle of the century, you're going to need 2 Earths just to accommodate everyone's endeavors, to accommodate the progress. Intelligent people obviously should start thinking. We need to make some changes. Now is a great time to be motivated to make significant change in our lifestyles because economically things aren't working out. Environmentally, things aren't working out. Psychologically, things aren't working out. What is going to make the real difference? What will actually be real progress? We look at what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, and he's talking about genuine progress. Persons who've acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated. Sometimes when people hear that, they become a little sad. Well, what am I to do? I don't know. I don't remember if I acted piously in previous lives. And in this life, well, let's not talk about that. And sinful actions completely eradicated? What's the result of all that? The result of all that progress is, Krishna says, you're freed from the dualities of delusion. The dualities of delusion means you're seeking fulfillment and you're seeking satisfaction in a world of duality. That means hot, cold, pain, pleasure, fame, infamy, happiness, distress. You're seeking your fortune there. From the intelligent point of view, that is not progress. How are we going to turn the whole direction of current human society around so that it actually makes real progress? It can't be done without genuine knowledge. Krishna is talking about a life that is situated in the best knowledge. And the result of that best knowledge is bhajante mam jidavrata. You engage yourself in bhakti yoga with determination. Someone was just asking me earlier today about the difficulties that can be there when you try to practice Krishna consciousness within the current human situation. A human situation which consists of so much economic pressure, so much social expectation, and then your own body and mind is pushing on you and filling your consciousness with expectations. You've got to cope with all that and at the same time try to be Krishna conscious. What to do? All that pressure upon you, economically, socially, psychologically, physically, sensually, all that pressure on you can be taken in a positive way. It indicates I need to make some lifestyle changes so that I can actually make real progress. It's a good time now in the world situation that we take ourselves apart. We put ourselves under a microscope and look at ourselves. Why am I striving for what I'm striving for? Why? Who told me to do this? Take away all the excuses, all the rationalizations. I'm doing this not for me, it's for the children. Even persons who don't have children, they say like that. For the children that will come in the future, I have to make sure that they can live in a secure world or in a secure home. So many excuses we have, but now is the time when those excuses fall away. And we can clearly see the reality that people are subjected to such a brutal struggle to satisfy their senses and try to have stability within this temporary and volatile world. So we can ask ourselves, is there a better way to live? Is there something else we can strive for? In other words, Krishna's not saying, okay, give up all striving, give up all struggles, give up all hopes for progress, and just be lazy and do nothing. No, the whole point of Bhagavad Gita is to get us to strive with determination for the best thing, rather than waste our energies of determination on such temporary and empty things. So now people are indeed starting to realize, we've been tricked. The dream that we were pursuing, it's vanished. What are we left with? I was speaking in New York a month ago. And there, so many people were telling me that, look, this is the way it is now. If we're fortunate to still have a job, it's not enough that we work. We have to work, and at the same time, in our hours outside the job, we've got to keep networking to develop contacts in the case that we lose the job we have. So we've got to work hard and network hard all at the same time. Otherwise, if you get relieved of your job and you haven't been networking, you've got no options. So you've got to stay ahead of the game. Work and network at the same time. Because any moment, your ceiling could come caving in. Your job is finished. Can you imagine how much anxiety this kind of life produces? Is this the way people are meant to live? How can there be peaceful consciousness for the sake of cultivating the ultimate goal of life when people are in such anxiety? And that anxiety is actually driving them crazy. So in these circumstances, we can look at the situation and think, I need to devise a better lifestyle for myself and for the children. some changes have to be there to some degree. It's a great time for downsizing your expectations. You can take advantage of the current economic climate to live more simply, to reduce your expectations of fulfillment and satisfaction from the material world, and increase your expectations of the results of your spiritual development. What will happen if I become Krishna conscious? What will happen if I increase my development of Krishna consciousness? It's a great time for looking at that. Why are our heads so full of these materialistic dreams? And then we feel all this pressure upon us. Prahlad Maharaj talks about this pressure in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the graduate study of the Bhagavad Gita. Prahlad Maharaj says, Maya Sakaya Bharam Udvahato Vimudhan. The extraordinary fool. What characterizes the extraordinary fool as opposed to the ordinary fool? The ordinary fool struggles under a burden when actually it's not necessary to carry that burden. The super fool struggles under a burden that is completely imaginary. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj uses the term vimudha, the super fool, especially foolish. Maya Sukaya Brahm. The super fool struggles under an imaginary burden. Oh, I have so many things I have to do. You don't understand. There's so many pressures upon me. Things must be done this way. What is Prahlad Maharaj, the 5-year-old, perfect Krishna conscious devotee, what does he say about that? He says, I'm simply thinking of those persons with love. He's not condemning them. He is condemning the taking of the unnecessary and imaginary burden, but he's saying, I'm thinking of them with love. How can they live like this? That kind of vision is real progress. As long as we are bewildered by the false hopes of materialistic advancement, we'll not be able to see our own life clearly. We won't be able to benefit our children properly because we're hallucinating. Maya Sakaya Bharam. You think that you're going to get real happiness from taking on such imaginary burdens. What do we really need to be happy? What is our real responsibility? What Krishna is talking about in Bhagavad Gita is the actual goal of the human form of life. To engage ourselves in Krishna's service with determination. What will fuel that determination required to achieve the goal of bhakti, the goal of Krishna consciousness in this lifetime? The determination is fueled by attentive chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra as an individual practice and by the congregational practice of chanting and dancing the Hare Krishna mantra together. Those two activities of private and public fuel the determination necessary to achieve the ultimate goal of life. Never consider that this practice of chanting, the individual japa, never consider that the congregational chanting, the kirtan, don't take it to be just some nice religious ritual. It is actually the provider of the dynamics for your spiritual progress, for your spiritual life to move ahead. And because of that individual chanting and congregational chanting, you can become Krishna conscious even in the dense darkness of this age. And I know, sometimes it looks impossible. Look at all the forces arrayed against me. I've got economic pressures. I've got social pressures. I've got family pressures. I've got pressures coming from my own body and mind on top of all that. And I'm supposed to be Krishna conscious? Some of you out there, you're in your early 20s. Just like I know, scientifically, that if you're a young man who's 21, I often explain, 21-year-old man, you're at the peak of your male hormone cycle. It means you're a walking inferno. And here I am telling you, you know, there's a lifestyle of sense control. There's a lifestyle of inner spiritual cultivation. And naturally you're thinking, well, sounds good, but what are the odds that, yeah, that I could go on in such a lifestyle? Anyone, no matter what your age is, no matter whether you were born in India, born in the USA, born here, born there, anyone who takes seriously to the individual and congregational process of chanting Hare Krishna can indeed make wonderful spiritual progress even in the dense darkness of this present age. So yes, you can spend your days just in anxiety, like wondering, how are we going to ever simplify our life? Oh, how are we going to be able to make the right decisions in order to reduce our materialistic engagement? It's just too much. As soon as we try, it seems then some challenge comes, and maybe we should just forget all about our spiritual endeavors and just try to make it through life somehow or other. And people can really get discouraged. What makes the difference? Focusing on the Hare Krishna mantra as an individual practice and as a congregational practice. There, you get the dynamics. From there, you get the dynamics necessary to make Krishna consciousness a permanent reality within this temporary material world. So that's why Krishna talks quite openly. Engage yourself in his service with determination. But now you'll say, but what about the previous lives of pious activity? And what about the pious activities in this life? And whose sinful activities are completely eradicated? Who's completely freed from the dualities of delusion? Isn't all that necessary in order to engage in Krishna's service? Well, this is why we stress so much the chanting of Hare Krishna. Whether you have those prior qualifications mentioned in this verse or not, if you seriously take to the chanting of Hare Krishna, your piety will be created. Your freedom from the dualities of delusion will be created. Your sinful actions and their results will be eradicated. That's just the beginning effect of chanting Hare Krishna. So yes, it's true. Take away the Hare Krishna mantra and you have a right to say that everything Krishna is speaking about in Bhagavad Gita is impossible. You have a complete right to say that. But bring in the Hare Krishna mantra. And that nullifies all our excuses. From time to time we discuss this. We make this proposition. You get a piece of paper. You write down all your excuses why you can't make the necessary adjustments in life to be Krishna conscious. And they all look very good. They look intelligently formulated, well conceived. But then you can crumple the paper up and throw it out. Why? Because of the presence of the Hare Krishna mantra. That Hare Krishna mantra, as most of you know, comes from Krishna himself, especially as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that Hare Krishna mantra makes it possible to be Krishna conscious in this age of impossibility. Consider that impossibility. We're living with persons who don't know how to take care of their mind, don't know how to take care of their body, don't know how to take care of their own habitat. And they're putting all that pressure on you, and then you have the pressure of your own ignorance, your own delusions, and somehow or other you're supposed to be Krishna conscious. If you look at it from that point of view, yes, things look very discouraging. But when you understand the power of the Hare Krishna mantra, what actually it is, then you can see everything that Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita you can achieve. So it's a great time for reconsidering how we are interacting with this world, how we are interacting with others, and how we are dealing with ourselves. It's a great time to jump out of the box and take a different look at our situation. When times are so-called good, it's difficult for most people to do a reevaluation of their life. Because actually, we're feeling good. The money's coming in. Life's not so bad. You know, when someone greets you in California, what's the first thing you say? I'm good. I'm good. Yes, even our members from India, they know the California ways. I'm good. Everything's fine. It's hard to say that now because there's so much insecurity. You may be saying, I'm good today. What about tomorrow? No matter what position you have, there's anxiety. My youngest brother, he'll be coming here tomorrow he'll share lunch with me. He's a vice president for Toyota North America. But he tells me, he said to me, it seems I kind of picked the wrong time to get into the auto industry. I mean, no matter how high you go, you're still in anxiety. And that's the conclusion of Prahlad Maharaj, a 5-year-old perfect devotee who says in Bhagavatam, Sadasama Digya Dhyama Sagraha. When you think the body is the self, and you identify with material satisfaction as your goal, you must always be in anxiety, whether you have a so-called little or a so-called lot. You have to be in anxiety. As long as you are burdened by anxiety, how can you say life is successful? How can you say you're wealthy when you're just drowning in anxiety? But then people justify it. But Swamiji, I am going through this anxiety for my family, for my children. But what kind of father are we then? What kind of mother are we to give to our children a lifestyle of anxiety, an inheritance of anxiety? If we really care for our family members, we want to show them a different way of life. We want to show how to make real progress. So please understand, it is not that Krishna consciousness is against progress. It's about real progress. How can you call what human beings have done today progress when it's so destructive? Destructive psychologically, health-wise, environmentally, economically. No one knows what to do now. It's a good time to be humble. And in a mood of humility, we can more clearly hear what Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita. Engage ourselves in bhakti, in Krishna's service, with determination. Who here can say they have no determination? Every one of us here has tried extraordinarily to get something. Now, if we just take that power of determination and apply it to Krishna consciousness, what a glorious life we'll have. Krishna consciousness is the art of the possible. Just like, who is Krishna speaking to in Bhagavad Gita? Is he speaking to a sannyasi, a brahmachari? Is he speaking to a mystic yogi? No, he's speaking to Arjuna, who's a family man, a military man. And Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, Bhagavad Gita, on a battlefield in between two armies. You can't think of a more pragmatic, practical situation than that. So this is Krishna showing us that all our excuses are useless. Krishna consciousness is meant for everyone in all places in all circumstances. This is the great calling in life. How to learn the art, science, and culture of engaging everything in Krishna's service for his pleasure. Then we're truly holistic. Then we are, in fact, we're beyond piety. We're beyond punya. A life in connection with Krishna, that is the ultimate goal of life. That is real progress. So now is a great time to reevaluate. Where is our life going? Where is our family going? Where is our career going? It's a great time to do that. When times are tough, people start to think. The Bhagavatam describes that Earth is in the middle planetary system of the universe. That means there's always going to be happiness and distress. Things, there'll be some bad things, there'll be some good things. There'll always be that mixture together. You're going to see things that are going to make you rejoice. Oh, how great is that? And you're going to see things that make you just collapse on the ground in lamentation and shock. How could such a thing happen? It'll be constantly like that. A train of victory and defeat, happiness and distress. On and on and on it goes. For me, a great example of that, because I spent years trying to organize Krishna consciousness in the old Iron Curtain countries, communist countries, especially in East Germany, which is now, it's now considered to have been one of the, probably the most oppressed country ever in human existence. So, when the Berlin Wall fell 20 or so years ago, people were rejoicing. Oh, it was like a triumph of truth, justice, and the Western way of life. People were crying. It was unbelievable. How could this... such a great step forward for humanity. A few years later, what were so many people in Germany saying? Oh, now in the western side of Germany, we have to pay for all the economic devastation in the former East Germany. Put the wall back up! Isn't it true? She's from Germany. She can tell you it's true. Put the wall back up. We don't have to pay for this. So one minute everyone's crying. Oh, humanity is together again. Oh, what a tremendous stride forward. The end of the evil empire. Freedom, justice, consumerism for all. 2 years later, put that wall back up, you know. This is the way of the middle planetary system. There are going to be great achievements and great disasters. Krishna is saying that this kind of... this is the duality of delusion. And don't invest in it. Understand that where you live, the planet you live on, these things are always going on. Happiness and distress, victory, defeat, glory, infamy. Take a step back from it all and aim your life in a different direction. Just like regardless of whatever political persuasion you are, we're not discussing that, for your recent presidential election, my family members, my brothers and sister, oh, This shows there's no limitation. We're going to be able to tell our children there's no limitation. I said, oh, really? Are you sure you understand the nature of this world? No, everyone, you know, they got sentimental for a while. There's no limitation. Oh. They couldn't understand why I was not, celebrating with them. So I told them, you know, I've been outside of the USA for quite a few decades, and for me, the most potentially emotional situation was the fall of the Berlin Wall, because I used to cross regularly into East Germany, get torn apart by the secret police, and so when the Berlin Wall fell, this could be kind of emotional. But then, look what happened just a few years later. We don't want to put our hearts into these kind of dynamics. We're not speaking about whatever political or economic arrangement you prefer, because the bottom line of all the political and economic arrangements as known today is the same thing: uncontrolled senses and ignorance of the self. When seen from the viewpoint of Bhagavad Gita, we're equally disposed to all politics and economics. Speaking at the University of Toronto, I was addressing a group of 77 certified management accountants. They're the CPAs, you know, the public accountants, and they're the management accountants. Those are corporate execs who have an accounting background but who also manage. They use their accounting skills to manage corporations. So I explained something to them, and they all burst out laughing. I said, you know what economic development is? Economic development is lust on an organized scale. They just burst out laughing. Said, wow, that's incredible. Now, just something I heard Srila Prabhupada say on a lecture the day before, but I said, wow, economic development is lust on an organized scale. Everyone knows what individual lust is. Multiply it on a social scale, and you've got economic development, where millions and billions of persons are lusting together in a network of lust. We must have growth. We must have consumerism. We must have more, more, more. How can you save yourself from becoming caught up in all that? There's only one medicine that's strong enough. That is the Hare Krishna mantra, which will totally rework your internal dynamics. By taking shelter of the Hare Krishna mantra, you'll desist from artificial economic endeavor, and you will persist with your spiritual progress. Bhajante mam dridhavata, engaging yourself in Krishna's service with determination. So this is what the world needs now, a total reworking of the internal dynamics that make people function. And then you'll see a change in the social dynamics. Otherwise, no change. Without the massive spreading of the Hare Krishna mantra, there's only one change that you can believe in. That's change of the body. The only change you can believe in. Dehi no smriti, dehi komanam yupanam ja. Just like you go from youth to adulthood to old age to death, well, the soul moves through all those changes. The soul is not affected by those kind of changes. So, that's the change that is the reality on the material platform. If you want something else, then we must consider what Krishna says very seriously as a practical application. Not just as religious belief, but as an action program, operating instructions for our life. Consider your own life to be a system that requires a new operating instruction, a new set of operating instructions. Then you can properly take advantage of Bhagavad Gita and you get the result. Bhajante mam dridhavrata. I will stop here and ask if anyone has any questions. Yes.
Modern society is responsible for indoctrinating us into a culture of anxiety and we accept dualities as just the way things are meant to be. So in this environment, how do we practice detachment and, you know, therefore, like Krishna says in the Gita, you know, become a person of equanimity?
Any hopes to practice detachment amongst this inundation of materialism, all those hopes are unfounded, impossible, they're dreams. What makes what Krishna is saying possible in this day and age is just, as we said, the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra as an individual and congregational practice. Otherwise, we agree. What Krishna is talking about would be impossible in this day and age. But Krishna has made achieving the goals as presented in Bhagavad Gita completely possible because of the chanting of Hare Krishna. So we should consider things from a twofold point of view. Impossible, yet possible. It's the chanting that reconciles all that. Otherwise, sometimes, yes, you'll be discouraged. Oh, how can I cope with all this economic uncertainty? I thought I had so much future security established, and now I have nothing. And so much anxiety is there. But those who see as their real progress in life the chanting of Hare Krishna, they can pass through all the immense problems of this day and age. Not only can they pass through it, but they can help others. Remember Prahlad Maharaj's words? The super fools struggling under an imaginary burden, but I'm thinking of them with love. That is Krishna consciousness. That's real human progress. Anything else? Yes.
Good evening. I was raised back in the time in 1988 when the gentleman from this country walked into Checkpoint Charlie and asked for the Berlin Wall to fall. Do you think from that significant point of that historical day that he had something to do with it, not getting into the politics of that day of his speech?
Everyone heard the question? Would you like to hear my perspective on that? Okay. He was speaking, you know, about one of your presidents in who made a speech at the Berlin Wall and challenged the leader of the former Soviet Union, tear down this wall. So did he have something to do with the wall coming down? Well, I spent 8 years organizing underground in those formerly communist countries, and I'll give you the KGB's point of view, okay? Because when the Berlin Wall fell and the communist bloc fell apart, even the CIA said they were caught off guard. They were surprised. Now, what did the KGB say? This was printed in the New York Times right before that breakup happened. They said, "We are worried about our young people in the Soviet bloc. There are three things that are the most dangerous thing for the future of our young people: Western clothes, Western music, and Hare Krishna." So why don't we take it from them? They knew the cause of their downfall. And our own Srila Prabhupada told us, if his books are distributed in those countries, that'll be the end of the Soviet bloc. So I take it in that way. Now, with all respect to your leaders, your political leaders, I say your political leaders because I'm actually, materially, I'm a dual citizen. So I can exempt myself in that way, you see. That And we respect anyone who has extraordinary power, because ultimately all power is coming from Krishna. Now, we don't say everyone's using their power that ultimately comes from Krishna properly, but still, power is an opulence. That particular leader you're speaking about, near the end of his life, there were days that he couldn't even remember that he was president of the USA. That shows you how material nature humbles you. You get the highest post in the world, and then when you retire and your body is breaking down, you can't even remember that you ever were president. Do you see how cruel material nature is? Where's the progress? So we want to look at progress beyond the body, beyond the mind, beyond politics, beyond economics. In fact, economics and politics is only progressive, truly, when they're used for inspiring persons, helping persons to achieve spiritual perfection. Then you've got real economics, real politics. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is making politics. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is making politics. How to arrange social situations so that people can actually be in touch with the ultimate goal of life. And remember Prahlad Maharaj's words. I'm thinking of these super fools struggling under an imaginary burden, but I'm thinking of them with love. I'm thinking about them with such love that I don't want to go to the supreme perfection, back to Godhead, back to Krishna. I don't want to go without them. I'm thinking of them with love. Let me stay and help them. That's how powerful bhakti yoga is. That's how powerful Krishna consciousness is. That is real progress. Yes.
So-called progress.
He's asking, when we go to work, how can we reconcile that we have to be part of that material progress? Bhakti yoga is the art of how to be in the world but not of the world. This is stated in the Bible, in the New Testament, that's the goal of Christianity, Jesus' teachings, how to be in the world but not of the world. But that's high technology. You need a lot of information how to achieve that goal. How to indeed be in the world, but not of the world. That's the essence of bhakti yoga. You do all your activities for the pleasure of Krishna. That doesn't mean just some mental adjustment. Okay, I'm doing this for Krishna, and then meanwhile it's all for me. No. It means that you're going to work to give Krishna consciousness opportunities to yourself, to your family, and hopefully to others. You're going to work to give, not to get. So if you think of going to work in that way, the whole situation can change. I'm going to work in order to give a Krishna conscious lifestyle to myself, in order to give a Krishna conscious lifestyle to my family, in order to give a Krishna conscious lifestyle to all the people who are unnecessarily struggling under an imaginary burden. As Prahlad Maharaj said, I'm thinking of them with love. So you can use your whole job impetus in that way. A selfish life is a very miserable life. I'm going to work to get for me. When I get my salary, when I get my bonuses, it's all going to be for me. I'm going to feel so happy I've got for me. And a few persons that I like. Instead, think you're going to work to give a Krishna conscious lifestyle to as many persons as you can. That way the work becomes transformed. This is the message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Samsiddhi Hari Toshanam. Lord Hari will be satisfied when you attain the perfection of working for His pleasure. Working for His pleasure means using the results of your work to establish Krishna conscious lifestyles for yourself, for your family, and so many others. Just like this whole devotional community here, this Krishna conscious enclave of Los Angeles. It's the result of thinking of others with love. So if you participate in that network of sharing Krishna consciousness, how satisfied you'll be. How successful your life will be. Okay? Very nice questions. Yes.
We're grateful for your Harikatha today, Maharaj. Thank you so much. Several years ago, I read your book, and I found it to be very well researched and actually quite charming. And I was wondering if you feel that the Vedic knowledge is progressing in the United States with the advent of all this yoga and these things. That's my question.
Actually, the spreading of people's interest in vegetarianism, yoga, kirtan, spiritual knowledge, this is all an indirect effect of the distribution of Krishna conscious literature. There's a direct effect and an indirect effect. So, you talk about Vedic knowledge. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Vedaishta sarvaya ahameva veja. Krishna says that he's the goal of the Vedas. That means Vedic knowledge and Vedic culture culminates in Krishna consciousness, in bhakti. So the degree that people who are interested in yoga, kirtan, spiritual knowledge, to the degree that they come to the conclusion of Vedic knowledge, to that degree their life will truly be successful. But anything that you do in this world will have a direct and indirect effect. Otherwise, Krishna warns in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, don't be caught up in the flowery words of the Vedas. That means don't be sidetracked with developing mystic powers, psychic powers, all sorts of alternative lifestyles short of the goal of bhakti. Krishna warns that don't get sidetracked, even by the Vedas. What do you think? All right. I thank you very much for your kind attention. Hare Krishna.